The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Guardian Football Weekly. Manchester City are champions after a Jose Mourinho masterclass against West Brom denies his rivals an on-the-pitch final whistle celebration. We get the chance to ask these questions. How good is Pep? How good is his team? And should they be stripped of the title for that video? Also today, we'll round up the Premier League, including Burnley closing in on Arsenal and the bottom three looking very much like they're doomed. Plus Wolves promotion, Celtic humiliating Rangers in the Scottish Cup, Nottingham Forest scoring a goal and Bury earning the title of first English team to be relegated. And that's today's Guardian Football Week. So yes, well done to Manchester City. They've won the title. We all knew they'd win the title pretty much since October, November, something like that. They clearly deserved it, John, didn't they? Is it too early to say this is one of the greatest teams ever to grace the Premier League?
I think their season has been one of the best in Premier League history. Whether they're one of the greatest teams, that possibly depends on how they do next season. I mean, maybe you talk about setting up a dynasty. So you would talk about great Premier League teams would be the two or three great Manchester United teams of the Premier League era, Arsenal, Mourinho's Chelsea. This is Pep Guardiola's chance to build a team of that ilk. There's no doubt they've been the best team by about the greatest distance I can actually remember. I'm trying to think, you know, not since Ferguson's sort of trio of titles, which, you know, after the treble season, 99-2000, 2001, they won by huge margins. But not since then has a team been so far ahead. Maybe, actually, you've got to throw in Mourinho's again. But so they're in that bracket, but I think they've got to win it again to enter that bracket properly.
Yeah, I think the strength in depth of the Premier League this season does mark them out as one of the best, because we mentioned some of those other Premier League teams. They weren't up against what I would consider four, maybe five, really good sides managed by top coaches. Guardiola's fresh Conte, fresh Mourinho, Klopp's okay in the Champions League, but I mean they're well clear of them in the Premier League. Pochettino, Arsene Wenger, maybe on the downgrade, but it's still a fantastic achievement to win it by such a distance, playing such memorable football as well.
Has Pep changed football in the Premier League, Barry?
He's changed the way one team plays football in the Premier League, certainly. Liverpool have really been the only team that have shown that there is a way to stop them, but I can't see anything other than total Manchester City dominance for another two or three seasons, at least as long as Pep is there, which suggests that there aren't many managers around to rival him.
Jonathan Wilson did a kind of Open University tactics video, which is worth watching, to talk and talking specifically about what Pep has done tactically to change things that other teams haven't done yet.
Yeah, I saw City's first game of the season. They played away at Brighton. It was a Saturday evening, and he started with a formation which had both Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva essentially playing as central midfielders, players that don't put a tackle in, but they just dominated the game as they've dominated every game. And it's playing with risk-taking values, that sort of management world outside of football, that sort of phrase, risk-taking values, to essentially, if you've got the ball, the other team can't take it off you. That's the best way to defend. It's the best way to attack. Obviously, he's had the players to produce that. But I think the thing is about Guardiola, it's the attention to detail. I think, actually, if we were to talk about problems with the Pep Guardiola approach, is that the amount of attention to detail he might put on a game against Watford, say, in October, can cause a certain amount of fatigue towards the end of the season, which is why, despite the fact that they're so far ahead of everybody, they have sort of crawled along a little bit towards the end. But as a formula to win the title in this country, just as it was in Germany, just as it was in Spain before, it is almost unbeatable, it would seem.
What John says there, Pep's attitude is kind of the very antithesis of Jose Mourinho saying, you know, approaching games sometimes with the attitude that if you let the other team have the ball, they'll make a mistake and then you can capitalise on that mistake. City don't tend to make many mistakes, and when they have the ball, then are pretty unstoppable. not all of the time, but most of the time. You know, they're on course to break all sorts of records, most wins, most points accumulated, most goals scored, and that is very impressive.
If this were a live radio show, we would have tweets coming in saying, yeah, but try it. As what if Pep was West Ham manager, would he win the league? What if he was the South End manager, Mark, would he win the league?
No, he wouldn't win the league. But, I mean, if you can afford a Ferrari, then that's what you drive. You don't, you know, drive a much lesser car.
I would just point out that if I could afford a Ferrari, I still wouldn't buy a Ferrari.
Neither would I.
Because you'd buy something similar, I take it.
I don't know.
You drive around in a beaten up old banger, would you?
Yeah, because I've never... When you see someone in a Ferrari... I instantly think they must be a dick. I might be wrong.
I also think that Pep Guardiola can afford a Ferrari, but he's the type of person that drives around in a Trabant or something like that. Mm.
But, I mean, the idea is if you know, he's earned that right to work for a club that's got that kind of budget. And it's not that they've blown all the money on a Neymar or even a Paul Pogba or Lukaku. They've not spent that much money on one player. He identified a number of positions that where they were really weak, the goalkeeper, the fullback positions, and he solved those problems and made other players in the team better. I mean, Raheem Sterling playing the best football, I think even sort of superior to what we saw at Liverpool. Fabian Delph, as a left back, I don't think anybody sort of saw that one come in. Otamendi as well has improved. So I think it's the combination of everything that makes City so strong. I disagree that they'll have it quite so easy in future years. I think that they were handed a really soft lead by just about every sort of title rival in this campaign. I mean, Chelsea failed to win four of their first eight games. Arsenal scored their first away goal on October the 14th. Tottenham had their Wembley woes early on. And Liverpool only won three of their first nine. So they won the title really early on. And United obviously had that wobble against Huddersfield in October time.
Yeah, that was pretty much the title over then,
wasn't it?
It
was. So I feel like they maybe won't have it such an easy lead next year, and then that becomes a different challenge, you know, if somebody can keep pace with them early on.
Mark, you said something before. You said about the top six, you know, they're all good teams and that. The one thing maybe against Manchester City, and this is just devil's advocate or whatever, is the teams below that level, I think, have been poor all season. So
Are they made to look poor by the fact that the other sort of five are so good? I'm not sure. I mean, would Crystal Palace or the team that's sort of in that bottom half now, you know, 10 years ago, would a team like that be in such a bad position? I don't know. It's a hard one, isn't it? It's really difficult to judge.
Also, because you said this best, haven't you? You know, there are 11 teams worse than Everton, and Everton are useless.
Yeah.
But I just can't remember how bad the teams at the bottom of the Premier League were 10, 20 years ago.
Well, I was just thinking the same. Probably pretty bad, but I think there's such a gulf in quality now that, like I say, there are 11 teams worse than Everton, and Everton are awful. And even their own fans think they're awful. That's a terrible indictment on what is supposed to be or what purports to be the best league in the world. So if you want to nitpick, you could say Man City haven't had much to beat, you know, similar with Celtic in Scotland. But I'm not so sure I agree with Mark that people will make up ground in the next season, because that kind of based on the premise that City won't improve even more, get even better.
I just think it's very difficult to win 18 straight games like they did again. I mean, that was such an astonishing record. And there were quite a few last-minute winners within that just kept the run going and going. And I think it's very, you know, to repeat that, 18 straight wins, I mean, I don't see them doing that.
City of 43 from a potential 45 points in games against teams in the bottom half of the table so far. So it's just Palace, was it, that they drew with, and they could have lost 2-1.
They've only dropped 6 points against in their 10 games against the traditional, you know, other top five.
So they're quite good.
They're pretty good, yeah.
How bad are Manchester United comparing? I mean, the way that Manchester United folded yesterday against West Brom to give City the title, they were so bad. I just, you know, there is that photo of that Manchester United fan asleep with a very flat head and four teacups balanced on top of it, and all the fans, the only pleasure they're getting from that game is just laughing at a drunk asleep man. He may have been totally sober, but he was just very tired or bored.
Yeah, I wrote the talking point for the paper today and just described it as a shapeless sludge. And that performance, it was just... It's one of those games where the clock is just ticking because there's just nothing happening, and there's sort of players running into positions but the ball not going to them, and the midfield and Pogba being utterly useless after being so great, well, for 45 minutes last week. Alexis Sanchez finding blind alley after blind alley. Juan Mata, a player that I think sometimes can lift Manchester United and, you know, make them find better angles and a bit more creativity. He got lost in it as well. Maybe we should credit West Brom and Darren Moore. But that was the type of performance that the doubts against Mourinho only heightened, because that was a dreadful performance. Listen, Manchester United don't have much to play for in the sense that they... are probably going to finish second. The title is all but done, but to be so lacking in motivation, and you know, people pay money to watch that.
Do you think the fans want him to be there at the start of next season?
I think there's a definite divide. I think there are some in any football club. You'll have football fans that will support the manager, whatever happens, and there are football fans who, having got rid of David Moyes and then Louis van Gaal, they don't want to be a fan of a club who keeps getting rid of managers. And then on the flip side, there are those that probably didn't want him in the first place. And what they've seen from Mourinho over two seasons, despite winning two trophies last season, not three, it's the quality of football, and there's so many sort of meek surrenders. Last season they meekly surrendered chasing for the top four. This season they meekly surrendered in chasing for the title. That wasn't the Jose Mourinho that we remember from 10 years ago. It's not the same person.
Do you think footballers passing him by? It's something we've discussed in the podcast in the past.
Yes, I think so. I think that Mourinho's apex, just like Rafa Benitez, was that late... the late noughties, I suppose you'd call it, until Pep Guardiola came and changed the game. And he's had victories over that style of football with Inter Milan and Real Madrid winning the league in 11-12. But it's the game now is about attacking and possession and keeping the best players to do that. And also his ability to relate to players has moved on as well. As he's got older... You talk to players that played for him at Porto, they think he's a god, and you know the way that he talked to them. But I don't think he gets the same tune out of people like Paul Pogba and Marcus Rashford.
He loves Luke Shaw, though.
Well, yes, he likes to give Luke Shaw plenty of instructions because he loves him so much.
Here's a hypothetical question, Barry. If Pep was the Manchester United manager and Jose was the Manchester City manager, who would win the league?
Manchester United.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think United would win it, and I think we'd see a different Pogba. I think we'd see a different Sanchez. I think they would win it. I mean, Kevin De Bruyne may not be too happy with that managerial swap.
Yeah. I was thinking that, but Mourinho tends to, as I said, he likes his sort of old soldiers. So I think Mourinho and Vincent Kompany would be like that would be a good mix.
He'd be very loyal to him.
Yeah, he likes players that have, you know, gone through the grit and the grime. If he doesn't like young players, essentially.
Kompany gave a great rousing sort of speech in that pub he was in last night. He sounded like something from Braveheart. And you get the sense as a player, Vincent Kompany, that you would, cliche as it is, run through brick walls for him. And we should mention City's game against Spurs, because Spurs had been on a run of not losing in being unbeaten in 14, I think. Spurs had had a whole week to prepare for this game. City had had the Champions League. And they basically blew Spurs away, didn't they, Mark?
Oh, they were fantastic in that first half, particularly. Could have been more than two goals up for sure. When the game was just turning away from City in that second half, I don't know if it was the substitution, but certainly when he went to three at the back, Guardiola, the tide turned back in City's favour. Now, that could have just been a coincidence, or it could have been a very clever swap, because Sterling went through the middle and started to cause even more problems. But Tottenham were lucky, I mean, to only lose by two goals, and it is a very good Tottenham side, and that they were destroyed for the second time this season by City, who could have won by more than 4-1 when they met just before Christmas.
I mean, they also kept Harry Kane completely quiet, and that doesn't happen very often. I don't think he had even half a chance.
I did wonder whether he was fit. He's rushed back, obviously, this golden boot sort of chase, and that mockery that's come with that, with his determination to win it. I mean, he didn't look 100% fit to me, and they've got this FA Cup semi-final on Saturday. I feel like Pochettino maybe needs to take him out of the firing line against Brighton just to make sure he's fit for that.
But the pace of that game, the City-Spurs game, I mean, I know, and we've talked a fair bit about how much quality there is in the Premier League. I don't know if we take it for granted sometimes when we're watching a game of just of that intensity and that pace. Or am I wrong?
Well, you speak to any old professionals, they'll say, oh, the game speeds up. And they've said that every year for the last 25 years. So, you know, speak to me in 25 years, we'll be watching
it'll be like ice hockey.
Speed, yeah.
Let me just see the ball.
Rollerball or something like that.
Now, Barry, would you like to talk about the incredible video that the communications company Etisalat, not Etihad, released congratulating Manchester City to the tune of, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Yeah, well, we were discussing this before we started recording, and it was clearly made by quite a lot of people. It's a very expensive, lavish production, which would have needed a lot of, you know, producer, director, storyboard, runners, assistant directors, all that crap, actors, extras.
Players.
Not a single person, one among them, who appears to have ever been at a football match. And we know some of the players are there. They've been to football matches, but it's toe curling. I mean, Manchester City fans will be embarrassed by it. Everyone else is obviously loving it because it's so twee and stupid. And I think the world is a better place for it. But there is certainly an argument that City should be stripped of the title because of it.
There is. And there is form, though, from, down the road, Manchester United have done a number of things. I point you in the direction of the safety video for Turkish Airlines involving Nani, Fabio and Raphael, Rooney, humorously playing Nani's luggage being a source of huge amusement. There's also a Japanese tomato juice advert. Ryan Giggs is the main star of that one. The Venky's chicken advert. Which is a particular favourite.
David Dunn getting stuck into it.
Morten Gans-Pedersen stealing a chicken drumstick from Ryan Nelson's beady gaze. A wonderful song, the Reading Come On You Royals song, done by the chairwoman, I think.
From Thailand, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great, great...
Sort of Euro-poppy.
Yeah, it's Eurovision.
Yeah.
Someone sent me QPR's song they released in Asia ahead of the 2012-2013 season, including the lyrics, "You better pray, you better run and hide, yeah. We know you're afraid of us because everyone calls us dangerous." Featuring Anton Ferdinand and Sean White Phillips, amongst others. This beauty was released 2012-2013. QPR finished bottom with 4 wins and the longest winner start to a Premier League season in history. And we cannot forget Michael Owen's Guide to Dubai on a virtual helicopter. Have you all seen this?
I haven't seen that one, no. I think that one's...
I think he's done a couple of those. I think, you know...
Michael Owen is now doing ads on the radio for... those solicitors who want to know if you've had an accident that wasn't your fault.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Is he?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Hi, I'm Michael Owen, and I know what it's like to be injured. If you've been injured and it's not your fault, you need to speak to Gowing Law. Text WIN to 80800 and Gowing Law will do the rest.
If you've been injured on the road or at work...
And here's Tracy with the travel.
I hope Gowing Law are paying us for that freebie.
Producer Jonathan, could you just do Michael Owen Dubai?
And this is no ordinary chopper. It's got special powers, and once we're airborne, you'll see just what I mean. Are you buckled up and ready? Great. Let's go and see Dubai. It may look a bit small from up here, but it is quite large.
Anyway, that was Michael Owen. There is a moment where he narrowly avoids Sam Torrance, who for some reason is standing on a golf course. Anyway, it's total heaven. Yes, Barry?
Just while we're on the subject, if I could steer everyone who hasn't seen them yet to Telly Savalas' Guide to Portsmouth, Birmingham, and a couple of other UK cities, it's well worth a look. Portsmouth, it's my kind of town.
Said nobody ever except for Telly Savalas. Before we finish part one, just a mention of the West Brom game. We have to credit Darren Moore. He's done a great job. You do wonder.
Are we crediting anyone who took over from Alan Pardew, basically for not being Alan Pardew? I would love to give Darren Moore credit. He's had an instant impact, but I have a feeling, and he may very well be very good at what he does, but I just have a feeling it's a reaction. Thank God that gate is gone.
Two things. I don't know if you saw the picture of the sort of bear hug that Darren Moore gave Jose Mourinho after the game, and Mourinho's face is just this sort of squirming.
His ribs are probably being broken, yeah. To be fair.
And the other thing is, West Brom, one of the worst teams to ever play Premier League football, have won at Anfield and at Old Trafford this season. Does anyone think it might have been the manager that was the problem?
Motivation clearly was an issue in a lot of the games, wasn't it? I mean, people go very cold on expected goal ratings and stuff like that, but according to them, they shouldn't be going down, and actually they've been unlucky in quite a lot of games. I mean, I just think that the players were so dispirited by Pardew that, like Barry said, they're just pleased he's gone and lifted everything around.
What's
the club
so bad about him?
And there are some good players.
Why is no one answering that question?
I might need to ring those lawyers, Michael. Well, before I answer that question.
Well, he did lose his new manager bounce, of course, which is hugely important.
Gary Megson stole it.
Yes.
From
did you hear the story that he?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
After taking on the job, after Gary Megson, three matches in charge.
He got the draw at Tottenham as well, didn't he, in one of those games?
Yeah, he phoned Gary Megson and said, you know, well, thanks for all your work, Gary, but you've actually managed to steal my new manager bounce, so thanks for that.
And there's been a post-Pardew bounce. So as producer Jonathan says, all you need to do is threaten to appoint him. And there'll be a bounce before and a bounce after you get someone else. Right, that'll do for part one. In part two, we will look at the rest of the Premier League. Welcome back to Guardian Football Weekly. Just time to point out the live shows. Barry, we're in Belfast tomorrow night.
Good. Looking forward to it.
If you're in or near Belfast and you've got nothing to do, come along. How many tickets are left, Barry?
I have no idea.
Have we sold any tickets, Barry?
I really don't know. I hope so.
Well, it's you, me.
I know we've sold one because a guy on Twitter was very happy his girlfriend had bought him one.
I know we sold three because someone accidentally bought two by mistake. He only wanted one. So we've got a crowd of two, but we've sold three tickets. If you want to come along, me, Barry, Eau Claire and Wilson will be entertaining. It'll be an intimate gig, if nothing else. Come along. Copenhagen, May the 10th. Midtjylland beat Hobro 2-1 after extra time last Thursday. This is in the Danish Cup. We will be going to the Danish Cup final and then doing the show afterwards. What a bumper day of football for the people of Denmark. And we've got a live show on May the 22nd in London at the Emmanuel Centre. Come to that as well. Before we do the rest of the Premier League, should we congratulate Wolves for making it to the Premier League, promoted after Fulham conceded a last-minute equaliser in their double with Brentford on Saturday night. They then went out and beat Birmingham 2-0 yesterday. Are we impressed with Wolves, Mark, or do you want to get some more stick from Wolves fans like you've been getting this weekend?
I mean, I've switched off the notifications on the phone because it just went crazy the last couple of days. I dared to criticise Jorge Mendes's kind of close links to Wolves. And it's not about Wolves and it's not even about Mendes, really. It's just I don't think any agent and any one club should be so closely kind of binded together. I think it leaves question marks over potential market manipulation, even if there is no such action going on. I just think it leads people open to question the motives of certain people there. But in terms of the performance of Wolves, I mean, they already look like a top 10 Premier League team to me. I think Nuno has done an amazing job. And I think you can separate the two of the football team and then what goes on in the boardroom area. But Nuno's improved a lot of players. I mean, Douglas on the left-hand side, the left wing-back, has been absolutely phenomenal, really. And he's done a brilliant job. Neves... this is where it all started, because I questioned why Neves was playing in the Championship, and I felt as his agent, Mendes should have got him a better club. But Neves didn't win the Championship Player of the Season. A little bit unlucky, I think, to miss out to Sessegnon, because he's been absolutely brilliant. So have Wolves. They could easily finish seventh next season if they invest.
I wouldn't switch those notifications back on yet.
Do you want you to be tagged in them as well, Barry, or not?
No.
Okay, you have nothing to say about?
Yeah, well, I raised this on our radio show yesterday with the lads at Molyneux, who was Jim Proudfoot.
Yeah, and Ray Houghton.
And Jim, he seemed to defend Wolves to the hilt and suggested they're not doing anything wrong. And I suppose if that's the case, no rules or laws are being broken. But yeah, there is going to be an asterisk beside their name. But it has been a splendid promotion effort. It never looked in the slightest bit of danger of not getting promoted. And they look, as Mark says, fully equipped to thrive in the Premier League.
One team they probably won't be playing is Southampton, who... squandered a two-goal lead against Chelsea, John. Did you feel sad for them?
For Southampton, yeah, a little bit. I think I saw the Arsenal game as well. They also lost 3-2. I think Mark Hughes has changed them, but unfortunately their vulnerabilities remain within the team. And Mark Hughes is staring down the barrel of that, dual relegation, first ever Premier League manager, I think, to have done that.
Premier League, I think there have been others. Well, Billy McNeil?
Ron Saunders and Billy McNeil,
okay.
in old money. Hmm. I just think, again, I mean, almost like West Brom, actually, you'd look at that squad that Southampton had at the start of the season, and you would see players there that you'd think are perfectly serviceable Premier League players. Like James Ward-Prowse is one of those players that, before the season, you would have thought he had a squeak going into the World Cup. You've got Dusan Tadic, who's a very talented player. You've got players like Stephen Davis, who's very underrated. He's one of those players that's so underrated, he's rated. And then there is a decent squad there. They lost Virgil van Dijk in January. And the problem is that they haven't been able to score enough goals. But weirdly, under Mark Hughes, they've started scoring goals. But then they've conceded them. And the dropping of the heads after that first Giroud goal was a bad sign. And they're 5 points shy of safety at the moment. And I can't really see them pull themselves out of that.
Were they unlucky? And Marcos Alonso should have gone.
Yeah.
And he had played quite a crucial role in the game, though.
Yeah, he should have been sent off in the first half for a stamp on Shane Long. I don't like to have a go at referees, but I'm absolutely baffled by how Mike Dean could not have seen it, because he was perfectly placed to see it. Wave play on. And Marcos Alonso went on to play I think he was involved in at least two, if not all three, Chelsea goals. So if Southampton have a 2-0 lead and Chelsea are down to 10 men, you wouldn't fancy Chelsea to come back from that, would you?
I mean, the two things, I mean, Southampton... I mean, I was looking at where the sort of points tally may be. You need to stay up. I think 36, maybe 37 is what you're aiming for. And Southampton have got some okay fixtures, to come, really, with Leicester and Everton, Bournemouth at Swansea before playing Man City. But you're asking a team that's only won once since November 26 to suddenly win three matches or something like that from here on in, and that's very difficult. And also, I thought Chelsea, although they won the game, for an hour were absolutely terrible. I mean, that was about as bad a performance as I can remember for them. So it was almost like getting back to the times under Mourinho when it was kind of ended for him. It was just an abysmal first half performance, particularly.
I got a tweet yesterday, and I've forgotten who sent it, saying, is Olivier Giroud considerably less good looking in a Chelsea shirt? There's something I can't...
I prefer him in blue, you know.
Do you?
Yeah.
It just doesn't look right to me. I want him to go back.
Is it because you haven't seen enough of him because he's still sort of Mr. Super Sub?
Maybe, yeah. I might change my tune. But he did quite well, didn't he?
I can't see Southampton extricating themselves. I can see Stoke getting out of trouble. I think they have a very kind run in.
Stoke are Mark Hughes' only hope.
Well, they've got to win tonight against West Ham, though, haven't they? Producer Jonathan says, has Giroud started dyeing his beard?
I don't know.
I'm not sure, but on the subject of beards, lots of people noticed quite how glittery Thierry Henry's beard on the telly was yesterday. It was really sparkly.
What, had he been to a glam night the night before?
I don't know. There was definitely something in it. He definitely glittered up his beard, but no one else here seems to have noticed this.
I was too busy listening to Nemanja Vidic, who I thought made a fantastic sort of debut, or certainly the first time I'd seen him on Sky. He was definitely one to put in the stable of future analysts. Did very well.
Yeah, he was very good, and an incredibly chiseled. I actually Googled, how do you get such a chiseled jawline after I saw Vidic?
I remember a story about Nemanja Vidic, which was when Boy George was in... Well, residing in a Windsor Group hotel, shall we put it, prison. He said that he had a picture of Nemanja Vidic on his cell wall.
Is that right?
Yes.
There we are. I can understand why.
Yeah, me too.
He watched Newcastle beat Arsenal 2-1. I think Arsenal are the only side in the top four divisions to have no points away from home in 2018.
That is correct, yeah.
That is astonishing.
I think it might even be the top five divisions.
Really? I mean... That is truly remarkable form, I mean, isn't it, from Arsenal? You know, Burnley are now 2 points away from them. They looked like a side, didn't they? I mean, we talked about the Manchester United sludge. It was sort of that. I mean, they started okay, but then you're watching going, I don't know if any of them really care or know anybody's watching.
I fully expected them to lose that game, and I was a bit annoyed when I saw them... go ahead, because I'd had a few quid on Newcastle. But, good, fair play to them. They managed to throw away a lead away from home again. And I didn't see a great deal of the game because I was watching the Old Firm derby, so it's probably better to talk to someone else about it.
Mustafi gets dug out virtually every single game, for his errors and sort of not tracking runs to the near post, which has done a game. But surely, I mean, defending is as much a kind of collective, and that comes, Wenger in, Wenger out stuff, but it does come down to the coach and, this kind of protecting the defence. I mean, there's nobody stopping those crosses coming in, for starters. I mean, it's just a complete mess of a team. And when people try to say, they're doing okay in the Europa League, they beat Milan, but apart from that, I mean, you can't say Ostersunds and CSKA Moscow are the kind of level that Arsenal should be aspiring to. And then they get drawn against Atletico Madrid and there's a widespread panic. It's supposed to be a team that can challenge for trophies. Should be relishing the prospect of a semi-final against Atletico.
I think the thing is with Arsenal is that no one goes to watch them at home and they can't win away, or they can't get any points away. Not been a good season, really, when you think about
No, it hasn't. It has for Newcastle. And that's, I think it was Jack Pitbrook from The Independent saying, what about Rafa for Arsenal? What do you reckon, Bess?
Why not? I don't think Newcastle fans would be in favour of that idea. I mean, John said earlier that when I asked if football was passing Marina by, you kind of suggested that Benitez is... best days that are behind him as well. Is that fair? And I wouldn't agree, because I think he's possibly doing some of his best work right now with this Newcastle team that on paper doesn't look even remotely well equipped to stay in the Premier League. And
they have got some good players. You know, Matt Ritchie is a Premier League footballer. Jonjo Shelvey talking about going to the England squad. Lascelles has been great. The new keeper they brought in has been good.
Yeah, and I think quite a lot of that is down to his coaching, you know. I don't think many people gave them a prayer. Oh, well, no, actually, that's probably not fair. But, you know, they're quite... It looks quite likely they're going to finish in the top 10 comfortably. And for that squad, I think that's a very good achievement.
I mean, Newcastle have lost only three games in their last 15, two of those to Manchester City and one of those to Liverpool. I mean, if you gave, say, Arsene Wenger that Newcastle squad, I mean, there's no way they'd have only lost three of those last 15 matches. And the collective, as Barry was saying there, the collective is what's making Lascelles look good and Shelvey be able to build a team that enables him to play to his strengths. And, I mean, Benitez has done a brilliant job.
Would they be worse if you gave the squad to Jose or to Arsene?
I think Jose Mourinho would do very well with Newcastle. That's the kind of team he would do a pretty similar job, I would have thought, to Rafa Benitez.
So maybe these managers, like in their dotage, that, you know, smaller clubs, that's where it's at. You know, that's where they can actually prove their mettle. Forget all this Champions League and, you know, World Club Championships and all that. If you want to show what a good manager you are, take over a club that's going to get relegated, take it back up through the Championship, then everyone will recognise what a good manager you are. Because Rafa Benitez is a manager that 10 years ago, as good as Liverpool were at that point, was still a hugely criticised manager across the board, you know, by pundits and so on and so forth. But I think now he's approaching this sort of national treasure status for the job that he's done at Newcastle.
That's a very good point. Maybe Pep will go to Barnet.
Well, I think quite a lot of it is down to the fact that people are very surprised he's still there because of, you know, the Ashley factor. And again, he was asked about, you know, his future plans, and he was very non-committal because he wants assurances, even though he got assurances last summer, which were then reneged on. He wants, you know, I think he's very much keeping his options open to see, because A, he'll almost certainly get better offers, and B, he wants to see if this takeover will happen. But I mean, Newcastle is a club with, as we all know, enormous potential, and they could conceivably win things under him with a fair wind. That fair wind being the one that blows Mike Ashley out of St James's Park.
It needs to be quite a fair wind, wouldn't it? Palace 3, Brighton 2. Wilfried Zaha, so important to Palace. What's he worth, John?
Well, he's worth Crystal Palace's Premier League status, which is worth £170 million.
How much will they sell him for this summer?
There was talk in the papers this morning that Manchester City are in among the clubs who want to sign him, and that £50 million was the figure being bandied about.
As Mark said before, Manchester City don't pay the very, very top rate. I think Laporte was £57 million, that's their transfer fee. So you probably, if they were in for that, you'd look at a fee around that much.
It'd be interesting if Zaha did get the move back to a real elite club, because you do wonder whether part of his success is the fact that everything at Palace goes through him, and, you know, he's absolutely adored by the supporters. Because you get somebody like Hatem Ben Arfa, who has been to sort of smaller clubs in say France, in Nice. He got the opportunity to go to Paris Saint-Germain and then celebrated on Instagram the other week by not playing for a whole year because he's been out of the squad. Now, I'm not saying that Zaha will get dumped in a similar fashion, but for him, be very interested to see where his mind's at, whether he goes to City and is part of a rotation there because they've got such brilliant wingers already, or whether it's maybe just a little bit below City where he can actually play. I mean, I was looking at somebody like Arsenal. I think he'd be perfect at Arsenal, you know, this kind of new team that they're looking to build with Ozil feeding him, and that playing every week may be sort of better suited than going to City and have to be part of a rotation, because Gabriel Jesus doesn't play every week or Aguero doesn't play every week, so it's quite difficult.
Maybe he's Croydon's Letizia.
I was about to say the big fish, small pond. I was going to call it the Sigurdsson syndrome, but maybe Letizia is a better version of that.
Yeah, I mean, the word is that he is, let's put it this way, he's his own man. He prefers to you know, his own company, and I think on international meetings with England and so on, he didn't really mix with the rest of the players and so on. And that was a problem when he moved to Manchester United. Now, he moved to Manchester United very young, and he moved in a time of great flux, but it didn't happen for him there. The fear would be that something similar would happen, but of course he may well have matured, and he's actually become a much better player since then as well.
The header as well, I mean, that was... Benteke would have been really proud of that one. So, I mean, he has developed his game a lot. It's not just a sort of show pony tricks now. There's a lot more to his game.
All five goals in this game in the first 34 minutes, proving that the Premier League is the best league in the world, Barry. And Glenn Murray had a great chance to equalise late on when the ball went in completely the wrong direction. He got his 12th goal. Only Kane, Sterling and Vardy have more than him. English players have scored more than him in the Premier League. Get him on the plane, Barry.
I wrote an article a couple of months ago about just players like, say, Jamal Lascelles was among them who I thought should be in the England squad but won't be. And I think Murray was on my shortlist, but I don't think he made the cut because he's too slow, I think. And, you know, it wouldn't be completely ridiculous, and he probably wouldn't play if he went on the plane. But, yeah, I just don't think he's prolific enough.
Huddersfield 1, Watford 0. Huge goal for Tom Ince. Wild celebrations. Captain Jonathan Hogg said it would be a miracle if they stayed up. Mark, do you agree with that?
Yes, I had them down as 20th. I mean, the budget is easily the smallest. They came up with a negative goal difference from the Championship. I don't think that's been done before. So for what David Wagner's done, and what I was most impressed by him in the summer was he wasn't too loyal to those that got him up. Actually, he was pretty ruthless in buying, you know, a whole new team effectively. And the ball from Zanka that assisted Ince's winner was fantastic. It was their first shot on target in the game, and a huge one, because when you look at their remaining fixtures, they've got Everton next, but it's Man City, Chelsea, Arsenal to finish. You did wonder how many more points they could get, and you know that was the potentially sort of game that keeps them up, really.
Liverpool 3, Bournemouth 0. Salah's header was absolutely glorious. Producer Jonathan says his favourite goal of the season.
I could see why you might think that. I mean, a cushioned header on the run with, you know, I'm not sure how he was able to sort of compute all the different things he needed to do to score that goal. But yeah, it was a wonderful finish. But we're getting to the stage now where he's making the extraordinary look ordinary, and maybe not necessarily getting the credit he deserves for some wonderful, wonderful scores.
I'm trying, as soon as Jonathan said, that's my favourite goal of the season, I suddenly forgot all the goals that have happened this season. I can't remember. I can only remember Ruben Neves's, which was quite a good goal we discussed last week, and the Sheffield United one that was better from
Cristiano Ronaldo's against Juve. Yeah, pretty good.
That was a good touch.
The Vardy one against West Brom was fantastic. The Salah one against Tottenham and the Wanyama one in that same game also.
The one I enjoy was Vardy against Spurs.
Yeah, that was a great goal,
which is a chip through. The reason I enjoyed it most, because the Spurs fans were singing about Mrs. Vardy, who at the time was on I'm a Celebrity, and speculating on what she might be up to in the jungle. And of course Vardy scored, ran to the fans, you know, hand behind his ears, and the Spurs fans were like, yeah, alright, yeah, you've got us.
Burnley 2, Leicester 1. Well, Burnley 7th. Now looking like Burnley is there for Burnley, and they could get sixth.
Yeah, and you know, as long as Southampton don't win the FA Cup, seventh will be good enough, and a first European campaign for 51 years for Burnley. I mean, talking about maybe underrated, but I mean, Ashley Barnes has just been phenomenal. He was being linked with Chelsea and everybody laughed in January. I mean, the way he's playing, I don't think that would have been as ridiculous as it sort of sounded.
Get him on that plane. Cancel his links with Austria, Barry.
I can't do that.
Okay. A small note, not hugely relevant, but as I said yesterday on the wireless, Barry, Hamzad Chowdhury's afro is simply stunning. He made his debut for Leicester.
I still prefer George Berry's.
Do you?
Yeah.
I think Don Goodman's still rocking a you know.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I had this because Ethan Ampadu has doesn't have ravages, but got, you know, a lot of dreadlocks. I wonder, would you, like, if you have a lot of hair, at one point, does it slow you down by any amount of time? Just not 0.001 seconds.
Didn't Crouch score a goal in the World Cup against Trinidad and Tobago, pulling the hair of an opponent?
Yeah. It was the chap who used to play for Sunderland. What's his name?
Lee Catamol? Oh, was that game, actually, when Crouch
scored?
Yeah,
he yanked his
used the dreadlocks for leverage, yeah.
Unacceptable behaviour, isn't it?
I was just going to say, actually, about Burnley Arsenal. I think they play each other towards, I think it might be penultimate. That, as we are now running out of things to be decided in the Premier League, the race for sixth could be the one.
That could be the thing that keeps us going.
Yeah, but, you know.
Well, I think it's slightly important, isn't it? Because if you finish seventh and get into the Europa League, you're effectively sort of. It's playing sort of straight after the World Cup final.
Just the thought that Arsenal season under Wenger is depressing. Next depressing season starts in July. Of all the teams that need a bit of time off, you know.
Can you imagine the Emirates?
God. Oh, now I really want it to happen. Does anyone have anything to say about Swansea Everton?
I just, what a joy, you were talking about Arsenal season. I mean, what a joyless campaign for Everton. And Allardyce said afterwards that, you know, his remit was to keep the club up when he came in. And it feels like there's just, you know, he can't wait to get out of there. The fans can't wait for him to leave. They were knocked out of all three cup competitions really early. They've, you know, just had a depressing season. And I thought Swansea should have won the game and would have won with slightly more luck and better finishing.
Swansea 5 points above the relegation zone. Could be Swansea and Crystal Palace surviving after those terrible starts. I mean, Palace's was what they lost their first 35 games. And Carlos Carvalhal, as I think you're meant to say, has done a brilliant job, hasn't he?
Yeah, Ellis James, our friend, interviewed him last week.
He must have been giddy.
Oh, yeah, like a schoolboy. And he absolutely worships the ground Carvajal walks on. You know, we mustn't forget just how bad Swansea were at one point this season. They were a complete laughing stock. They looked absolute certainties for relegation. I still have a feeling they might go, but... just because I like Carvajal so much, he's so entertaining and seems such a nice guy, I hope they don't. But, yeah, I can't shake the feeling that Stoke are going to get out of the bottom three, which means someone else will have to replace them. And that could well be Swansea, or it might be West Ham.
They meet on the final day, Swansea and Stoke.
Yeah, that could be a biggie.
Could well be that may keep.
Sorry, I'll be focusing on the race for six, I'm afraid. Swansea, massive game tonight for Stoke. They go to the London Stadium. Big game for West Ham as well. Stoke could close the gap to 17th to 3 points. West Ham could stretch to 9 points above the drop zone, which would almost certainly be enough with five games left. In the Championship, obviously, Wolves are up. I think they need one more point to get the title. Fulham's point means they're third, being overtaken by Cardiff, who won 2-0 at Norwich with two goals in the last 5 minutes. Aston Villa confirmed their place in the playoffs with a 1-0 win over Leeds. Middlesbrough and Millwall make up the playoff spots at the moment. It's tight. Derby dropped out. Their form has been pretty woeful, hasn't
Fulham
it?
And Millwall meet on Friday.
Do they?
That's a biggie at the Den. Yeah.
Oh, that is. Preston, Sheffield United, Brentford, Bristol City could all feasibly... make it. Well, they couldn't all feasibly make it, but one or two of them could. At the bottom, Sunderland unbeaten in three, Barry. All draws. They're bottom. 6 points from safety. Three games to go. Are you sad? Resigned? Indifferent?
Kind of indifferent at this stage. It is sad, but you know they deserve to be where they are.
Burton 1 point better off than them after beating Derby. Barnsley are third bottom. They drew with Bolton, who remain 2 points above them and on the same points as Birmingham. Baz, do you want to get any more abuse from Ipswich fans? Or was that last week's?
I'm kind of bored now.
Okay, fine. Nottingham Forest scored a goal. Was that just with the pod or just specifically?
No, the thing is, you see, you write an article and then you get abused by people on Twitter who haven't read it properly. And then you end up just... writing it again, but in, you know, a little bite-sized summary, and then you get called a cunt. And just, you know, I said what I said in the had to say in the article. I appreciate Ipswich fans are bored with Mick McCarthy. I appreciate it's time for a change, but I don't see the point in booing him when you've just taken the lead in a game he's managing. He's already agreed to go, and the man of the match has been a player he bought for tuppence halfpenny from Limerick in the League of Ireland, who's obviously going to generate money for Ipswich in the future. Just, you know, cut him some slack. He's going. You're winning. Enjoy it.
Nottingham Forest scored a goal. First one since Matthew Cash scored what was the winner against Birmingham on the 3rd of March. That is a long time, isn't it? Forest then drew six consecutive blanks, picking up 3 points in the process. It continued on Saturday as Aitor Karanka's side went 1-0 down at home to Ipswich. As the clock ticked past 84 minutes, there was ironic applause as the run reached a club record of 636 minutes. Just when they might have lost faith, they were ordered a penalty. Ben Brereton was bundled over in the box. Not that long ago, since didn't they beat Arsenal in the FA Cup? Yeah, oh, he had a very good game, I seem to remember.
It's also almost as if Karanka's a disciple of Jose Mourinho, isn't it? The way he sets his team up.
Anyway, he scored that penalty, and 6 minutes later, Joe Lolley volleyed in a winner. There you go. Two goals in a game. Well done, Nottingham Forest. In League One, the top two, Wigan and Blackburn, both drew. They're both 5 points clear of third place Shrewsbury. At the bottom, Bury are relegated after a 3-2 defeat at home to Northampton. Their boss, Ryan Lowe, said, "I felt it doesn't mean enough to certain people." Following their 26th defeat of the season. Am I surprised by it? Probably not. Gutted, yes. He took charge of them in October following Lee Clark's sacking. Bury have lost their last seven games, haven't won since beating Gillingham on the 24th of February. So fair play to Bury fans who are still going. Accrington Stanley drew at home to Exeter in League Two. They needed a win to secure promotion, but they're basically up, as are Luton, who beat Crewe. Wickham won at Yeovil, they're third. At the bottom, it's looking pretty bleak for Chesterfield and Barnet, both adrift, although Chesterfield do have a couple of games in hand. Fitbar, Barry.
Yeah, the Scottish Cup semi-finals were on over the weekend. Motherwell beat Aberdeen 3-0 to earn the right to get beaten in another final this season by Celtic, having already lost to them in the League Cup final. But yeah, Stephen Robinson, they're sixth or seventh in the Premier League. Stephen Robinson, former Oldham manager and Northern Ireland international player, is in charge of them. And, you know, two cup finals in one season is a mighty achievement for a team like that. And here's hoping they will meet Celtic in the final, and here's hoping they can give them a game, because Rangers certainly didn't give Celtic a game yesterday. It was embarrassing to watch for Rangers fans, I'd imagine. They didn't lay a glove on Celtic at all. Got absolutely hammered. Rangers had a man sent off in the 51st minute. Andy Halliday suffered the embarrassment of being substituted at the 41st minute, I think, after Celtic.
He was fuming, wasn't he?
Yeah. Celtic, I think, had just gone 2-0 up, and the number went up. I'm not sure why Graham Murphy couldn't leave it till half-time. You know, there was 4 minutes till half-time. But anyway, Halliday was hooked, and he gave Murphy both barrels as he went off the pitch. Absolutely furious, as I think he had a right to be, because it was very unfair that he was singled out from the 11, pretty much all of whom were awful. They've met four times this season. Celtic have won 3, one draw, and they have to play again in the league at Celtic Park at the end of this month. And just, if Rangers are the best of the rest, then, you know, what is the point of even playing the Scottish League? But then again, you know, look at Man City.
I don't think Graham Murphy's going to get that job on a permanent basis, you know.
There was an announcement, wasn't there? Didn't someone come out before?
Dave King, the chairman, did earlier this week, or earlier last week, I should say.
Seems weird timing.
Yeah, ahead of like the biggest game of the season, you know, the chance to deny Celtic the double treble, I think it is. He came out and said, oh yeah, we want someone who's good at the job and all this sort of thing. And it caused outrage, which is often the state of being at Rangers, it's fair to say.
We had
Murphy was very chippy, glum, kind of embarrassed and angry after, in his post-match press conference, he refused to discuss his own future. And sort of straight batted pretty much every question that was put to him. But he did say, you know, that Andy Halliday had a right to be angry with him, and they discuss it later in the week.
Like men.
When things had calmed down.
Into the non-league, international league, there was a tweet from Tim Bruin, John Bruin,
yes,
saying, how much of the show will be about Macclesfield Town? Do you know Tim Bruin?
Yes, I've known him since the day he was born.
Okay.
Yeah, he's my brother, obviously.
Okay, and how much of the pod will be about Macclesfield Town?
All I can say is that Macclesfield are within a win of returning to the Football League. They could have done it actually at the week. Well, they need 4 points. They played Leyton Orient on Saturday, televised game, and actually were pretty lucky to draw 1-1 with Leyton Orient, who played, I am told by one of our colleagues in the office, one of their better games of the season. So, a lot of my family were there, very, very excited, but they're going to have to wait. I think they've got Eastleigh and then Dagenham and Redbridge to go. So, tense times in the Silk Town.
And there you are. Just shows that if you do know someone who's on the pod, if you're related to them, you'll probably get your question read out. That'll do for part two. In part three, we'll begin with Archie in Lucas Podolski's kebab shop. Welcome back to Guardian Football Weekly. Let's start in Germany. Archie Rintutt is there. How are you doing, Archie?
Very well, thanks, Max.
Nice to talk to you. I presume if we've caught you on the hop, you're not in Lucas's kebab shop, but hopefully close enough. Bayern have announced their new manager. Tell us all about him.
Yes, Niko Kovac, Croatian defender who I'm sure quite a few people will remember just from international football. But yes, the Eintracht Frankfurt coach will move there next season. It's quite something because he's not Bayern Munich's first choice, and that's no secret. You look at the likes of Thomas Tuchel, for example, they were very keen on, but in the end couldn't agree something with. There's been a lot of chat as to whether Tuchel turned them down or whether it was Bayern not wanting him. But in the end, Kovac is the man they've gone for. And that's something of a left-field choice. They've always wanted somebody who is a German speaker. And Kovac very much fits that. He grew up in Berlin, in fact. And with Eintracht Frankfurt, has done a very good job. He managed to save them from relegation his first season, took them to the German Cup final last season. And this season, they've been competing for a Champions League place. The controversy comes in the fact of the way that they've actually got him, because Eintracht Frankfurt are happy because they weren't contacted by Bayern Munich. Freddy Bobic, their sporting director, saying how respectless it was that Bayern Munich went about their business. Bayern Munich claim, and Kovac claims, that he took a phone call on the Thursday from Hasan Salihamidžić, the Bayern Munich sporting director, who spoke to him, offered him the job, and he said yes, which is a bit rich, because Kovac has been going on about how much loyalty he demands of his players and et cetera. The usual hypocrisy that you find in terms of from coaches and players when they're talking about this sort of thing, but then they go and take a bigger offer. You can't really blame Kovac because it's such an opportunity for him, but it'll be interesting to see how he gets on next season.
In the league itself, how much is still to play for?
There's still quite a bit. At the bottom, there's the relegation playoff still to be done. Hamburg and Cologne are pretty much down now, you would say. They both lost at the weekend. At the top, Schalke beat Dortmund in the Revier Derby. Naldo scoring a goal which was about 126 kilometres per hour. I'm not sure what that converts into miles per hour, but it was a hammer. Really quite quick. So you would say that Schalke are there in terms of the Champions League places, and it's just about settling the other two Champions League places. So Dortmund are playing Leverkusen next weekend even. They're in fourth, Leverkusen, because they beat Frankfurt 4-1. And you've got Frankfurt, Leipzig and Hoffenheim creeping up on the outside. Julian Nagelsmann received a lot of praise last season for taking Hoffenheim into the top four. But I think the job he's done at Hoffenheim this season has been almost more impressive because he lost all of his best players. And Hoffenheim have got a big game next weekend against Leipzig, which is also in the mix for the top four. So it's Dortmund teetering on the edge there of not making it, but you would expect them to do so. You've got the German Cup final coming up next month, and you've got the semis this week. You've got Leverkusen against Bayern, Schalke against Frankfurt, and that's another reason why Frankfurt aren't happy with Bayern, because this whole move for Niko Kovac has destroyed their rhythm in terms of the run into the end of the season, and indeed for this Cup semi-final against Schalke as well.
And is your dad, Rindo, how's he feeling about Fulham's promotion push?
Oh, I think the words were on Saturday evening when I spoke to him. He said absolutely gutted because of Brentford's 94th minute equaliser. But the run as a whole has been something incredible. I don't think any Fulham fan would have expected that to have been coming around the corner, particularly after the 1-0 defeat to Sunderland in December, when Sunderland hadn't won a home game in a year. And it looked like Fulham were meandering towards a mid-table finish. But then Alexander Mitrovic being brought in from Newcastle on loan, Matt Target as well being brought in on loan from Southampton, those have been two really key signings. Mitrovic scoring again at the weekend. I think my dad is just very keen, as much as anything, to not see Neil Warnock with a smile on his face come the end of the season. So that's almost as important as Fulham getting promoted for him. But we'll see. It's been a ridiculous run for Fulham anyway, but it would be very Fulhamish, as they say, if Fulham were to finish the season unbeaten and yet still not go up through the playoffs.
Archie, if I could just take you back to Lucas Podolski's kebab shop.
Sure.
Why could Bayern Munich not wait until the end of the season to appoint or poach Kovac? Do they just not care, or what other clubs think of them, or how they go about doing their business, or was there some reason they had to do it now?
They are not fans, Barry, to say the least. When they signed Leon Goretzka in January, so Goretzka will move from Schalke to Bayern at the end of the season, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, the chairman of Bayern, said that this was good because he was keeping Goretzka in the league, which seemed a bit rich, because instead they're just stripping another rival yet again. And indeed, by not waiting with Kovac, it's a case of them kind of doing in another one of their rivals, although Frankfurt are so far off them in the table. But it really disrupts the end to Frankfurt's season. There have been comparisons drawn with what happened with Mario Götze in 2013, where the announcement of his signing to Bayern the following season came just a day before Dortmund's Champions League semi-final. So Bayern are not popular, but they really don't care. They are just happy to do what's best for them. They have, in other cases, actually helped out other clubs in terms of with testimonials to help raise money. They are generous in that sense, but when it comes to making the best decision for Bayern Munich, they are very selfish, I think you could say. But who isn't at the top level of European football? This move by Bayern won't endear them. And they had set a deadline as well, saying that they wanted to appoint their new coach or know who it was by the end of April so they could plan for next season.
Archie, thanks for your time.
Cheers, Max.
Archie Rintuck out in Germany. Mark, you're a European football expert. Could you help me with a roundup of what's happened on the continent? In Spain, big news from Real Madrid's game for us, Gareth Bale being left out of their squad for the trip to Malaga.
Yeah, he was obviously hooked against Juve in the Champions League game that they won, but he wasn't the only one that missed out. His mate Modric didn't play, Cristiano Ronaldo, also one of those to be rested. So, I mean, Isco was the star turn against Malaga in that 2-1 victory. I wouldn't read too much into the fact that he didn't play in this one particular game against Malaga, more so that he got substituted against Juve, and that in the previous lot of Champions League games, he hadn't been considered first choice. So I think that should be a concern, although his agent says he's perfectly happy and will be staying for next season.
Barcelona broke records.
They did, yeah. Recovered somewhat from that humiliation in Rome, beat Valencia 2-1. Now means that they're unbeaten in 39 matches in La Liga, which is an all-time record, beating Sociedad's previous best, and they're still on course to become the first Spanish team ever to go for a season invincible. And yet, after what happened in the Champions League, still feels like it's going to be a disappointment, even though they've got the Spanish Cup final to come against Sevilla as well.
That's amazing, isn't it? To go unbeaten, but everyone go, actually, wasn't that a great season? Yeah,
Valverde he's been heavily criticised, particularly by the supporters, for the cowardice way that they went out of the Champions League more than anything.
Five wins in a row for Real Betis. Deportivo La Coruña picked up their second win in a row. They're still 5 points from safety. Any hope?
I don't think so. I mean, 5 points for a team down at the bottom is a lot, you know, to manage. Yes, they've won a couple of games back-to-back, but current Seidel still maybe not the answer to all of their prayers.
In Italy, I think the one thing that everyone's seen from Italy is quite sensational save in the last minute from Donnarumma.
Could well be the title decider, really. Napoli drawing 0-0 at San Siro, away to Milan. Milik 6 yards out, middle of the goal, can go either side to win the game for Napoli. And Donnarumma produced just a stunning save. I think as far as Donnarumma goes, he's had a bit of a shaky season, really, for Rossoneri, but that was one moment that could well define the season. Juve, as Juve kind of usually do, beat Sampdoria later on. They play Napoli next, but that was a real big blow, I think, to Napoli's chances of the Scudetto, and one of many 0-0s in Italy this weekend.
Gigi Buffon has not sort of covered himself in glory over this whole Michael Oliver affair, hasn't he? I mean, Michael Oliver's and his wife have both had threats made against them, and Buffon was interviewed again and sort of came out and said, I agree with everything I said.
Yeah, well, he's in the wrong. He thinks Michael Oliver should have played the occasion rather than and adhered to the Gigi Buffon narrative rather than applied the laws of the game. And he's wrong. And, you know, it's funny up to a point, but when Michael and Lucy Oliver is also a referee, are getting death threats, probably just from weirdos on the internet that won't actually amount to anything, but it's not very nice. And Buffon should apologise. And he clearly has been given every opportunity to apologise and refuses to do so. So
I mean, the amazing thing is that Juve are still claiming that, you know, we need VAR, as if VAR would have sort of solved their issues in that. I mean, Benatia clearly pushed Lucas Vazquez. It's a penalty whether, you know, whether Michael Oliver sees it or, you know, in the stands as well. It's really bizarre.
It reminds me, remember the Euro 2000, it was Portugal-France, and there was a last-minute penalty decision which Zidane rattled home. And it was the one that Abel Xavier and a couple of other players got lengthy bans. And the sort of innocence that they pleaded for one of the most obvious penalties you'll ever see. And I don't know, there's something that just goes on that,
yeah, know, I mean, like a last-minute penalty, you have to change the laws of the game because it maybe ruins the result that
you think that's
on.
Fair, actually. I think, you know, you shouldn't be able to send someone off in the first 5 minutes because no one's really ready.
Well, especially in the old firm game. Yeah, anything can go in the first 5 minutes.
Absolutely right. Yeah, reduces in.
Yeah.
Well, maybe instead of getting Ron Vlaar in charge of VAR, as we have advocated, we should get Gigi Buffon, who apparently has been linked with Boca Juniors, by the way. Carlos Tevez wants him to go and play there. And they're apparently met for dinner to discuss it. But we should get Gigi Buffon to just arbitrarily decide contentious decisions in whatever fashion he particularly would like to see the game go.
I believe there was a culture of that at Juventus going back a few years ago, wasn't there?
Well, I think Ron Vlaar should do it, except for moments of extreme emotional importance to certain people.
Yeah.
And then Gigi comes in and just, he's the Hollywood movie. That's, you know, he's, Ron Vlaar is doing it by the letter of the law, and Gigi comes in so where every single moment is like the end of, what's the, Jerry Maguire, that's it. And we'll all be happy ever after. Mark, France, anything exciting going on?
Well, the title was decided on a bit of a shocker, but Paris Saint-Germain have won it.
No.
They dethroned Monaco in a quite embarrassing way, really. Monaco, of course, the previous champions, 7-1 at the Parc des Princes, a game that was over, after about 15 minutes. PSG just steamrolled them early on. Cavani, embarrassingly missed an open goal last week, was much more like the kind of Cavani that we've come to expect in terms of his finishing, also setting up some goals. Falcao scored an own goal for Monaco, and now there's talk, does Jardim, that the Monaco coach, does he leave? He's won the title there. What else is there left for him to achieve at the club? And maybe that there'll be Premier League teams looking at him.
Well, maybe he might get to manage Arsenal's Europa League adventure beginning on July the 1st.
Yeah, I hope he hasn't got any holidays booked. Yeah. Zlatan said he'll play for Sweden at the World Cup. He sent a tweet going, the chance of me playing in the World Cup is sky höga, which is Swedish for sky high.
Is that a good idea?
Well, it might be a problem because we don't know if Sweden want him to go.
Well, that's the thing.
And also, he's got a partnership with a Malta-licensed gambling operator called Bet Hard. It's very sort of for agricultural 442 betting side, isn't it?
Doesn't no really punches. Scream when the fun stops, does it?
Gamble aware.
Anyway,
bet hard.
Bet hard and bet often.
Bet harder, go home.
Chapter 4, Rule 25 of FIFA's Code of Ethics states that persons bound by this code shall be forbidden from taking part in, either directly or indirectly or otherwise, being associated with betting, gambling, lotteries and similar events or transactions connected with football matches. Unless Zlatan can somehow persuade us that Bet Hard is not a betting firm. Many comments after Thursday's Buffon-based pod. The most important, though, and the first comment after the discussion of stoats and weasels, I referred to them as rodents. I forget who sent this, but I was wrong. I apologise. They are mustelids. Hey, Barry, thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Mark.
Cheers, Max.
Thanks, John.
Cheers, Max.
Back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.